Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is September 16th, 2005. Today's session is entitled Praying in the Firestorm, Faith Practices, presented by Gene Larson, session number LAJ-2005-05. Let's listen in.
My name is Gene Larson. I'm a Lutheran pastor out of Missoula, Montana. And I've been working on this writing and conceptual project on wildfire as part of God's creation for over a year now. And I haven't gotten much writing done, but the thinking's coming along pretty well. So all this week we've been looking at wildfire from a variety of perspectives. Wildfire as a sort of a case study in chaos as part of creation. So we looked at some biblical material, we looked at the history of wildfire in America, and yesterday we looked at chaos theory, wild and crazy things. So today is an opportunity for people to bring their thinking. We can have a conversation about how this works. We can have, mostly I want to sort of push out and how this might shape our faith and practice. How might we pray about wildfire in a new way? Are there any other creative endeavors that we can pull together to, in a sense, celebrate or at least honor fire in a different way than we had before? So, we invited people who've been with us for the whole week to bring some thoughts and some creative things along. And so that's sort of where I want to start, but why don't we begin with prayer? The Lord be with you.
Also with you.
Oh, holy God, thank you for fire and the new life it brings. Help us to make a way for all the kinds of wildfires and chaos that are part of your creation. In Jesus' name. Amen. Let's do introductions around again. I'll go ahead and close this. The kids are just out of school. Did you just get to the village yesterday?
Yes.
Or today?
Yes, yesterday.
Oh, excellent. Remind me of your name.
My name is Roger Trigstead.
All right, Roger. I saw you introduced.
I'm here on staff working on the kitchen, in the kitchen for a while. And I live in Salem, Oregon. And,
excellent.
I'm a retired civil engineer.
Excellent.
Terrific. I'm a retired nurse. And let's see, we came in on Wednesday.
You guys are from Wisconsin?
Wisconsin, Superior.
And are you doing volunteer, short-term volunteer, or just here for fun?
Just here for fun.
Oh, good.
Ron Becklin, married. Yeah. And from Superior, Wisconsin also. And I just finished up doing a year's work with the congregation, some pastoral work for them. And then I also work as a pharmacist part-time, so kind of do a dual thing through the years.
Great.
And so I'm technically semi-retired for a couple months.
And then you'll get back at it, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Terrific. Great.
I'm Pete Schweppe, and I have been working up here as mechanics apprentice all year, and I'll be done in about a month.
I have this image of a magician's apprentice.
I wish.
Mechanic, magician, yeah. I'm Rita Summerspine again. I teach in Missoula and got to know Jean and came as her temporary significant other this week, so it's been fun.
It's great when you're on staff, you can bring either your spouse, and in my case, mine couldn't come, or a friend, kids, or whatever, so it's a pretty good deal. All right, why don't we just
share our creative things, those of you who brought something, can let me know what we've got so we can make sure we include everyone. So Pete, do you have a song for us?
Yep.
Oh, cool. Excellent. Anything else?
Not
that you have anything else, but we could have some conversation after we do our things. I'd like to see here if you had anything to say from your Ishmael book, too. But. And Rita, you've got the beginning of your Broadway show?
Yes, I do.
I see. Mm-hmm. Is that all?
Yes.
Well, I have a poem that I wrote up here last year when I was here in November, just starting to work on the fire stuff. That's my own. And plus I have lots of stuff from other people that, both living and dead, contemporary and medieval, that I think add to the church's way of thinking about fire. Something from St. Francis, something from a modern poet, some liturgical art done by Kristen, I don't know how to pronounce her last name, Gilja, who's the village artist, who's responsible for that, that she did for the theme several years ago that involved water and fire. So, shall we just share this stuff around and go from there? Do you guys have anything you want to share in terms of creative things? We can move from this part, though, into the conversation about how this might... I mean, does this have any place in the church? Does this have any impact on our faith? Does it have any impact on the way we live? And I know you're really going to be in the dark because you haven't been with us for much, but...
I'm still trying to get the gist of what this is all about.
I know you are.
So go ahead. I'll just sit in the corner.
I know. You're sitting in. How can we help you get a sense of what this is about? Let me give one paragraph of the sort of overall thesis of this. Our old way of looking at wildfire. I'm a Montanan, and we've been surrounded by fire over the past several years, several seasons worth of fire. And I know that biologically, as most of us do now, that wildfire is really essential for the health of the forest. It does all sorts of good things in terms of renewing the forest. And that by suppressing wildfire, we have been creating a lot of problems for us. We've been making matters worse. What I've noticed in terms of the life of the church is that church talk and church prayer haven't quite caught up to that new understanding that we have from science. So that when wildfires happen around Missoula, we're still praying, oh God, put out the fires. Send rain, quick. And, you know, if God answered our fires, then we'd be continuing in the pickle that we're in, right? So I started working on this stuff as a way of saying, okay, how might the church begin to reimagine wildfire and other sort of naturally chaotic events that are for sure sometimes tragic for humanity, but that in the long, big scheme of things actually serve to bring new life to the creation? So is there a way we can change our prayers, where I started? Is there a way that we could say, oh God, thank you for these fires? And say that with sort of a full heart. So that's, does that help? That's sort of what we're looking at. So we've looked at some biblical resources and some history of fire in the U.S., how fire came to be seen as our enemy, because it wasn't always seen that way. And some theological resources. So here we are with our creative liturgical resources. So do you guys want to start with some historical things? Do you want to hear, like, get warmed up with some Francis of Assisi and other things, and then have us do our stuff at the end of that? Okay. And then there are some, we found some hymns in here. Francis, of course, is this amazing man before his time. And out of this book, which is a very interesting teaching resource on the life of St. Francis and how it impacts some contemporary issues that we're all facing, I picked up a couple things. One is that Francis evidently prayed a portion of the book of Daniel every day of his life. And this was from the song of the three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, when they were in the fiery furnace, not burning up, with King Nebuchadnezzar. So here's the section from the book of Daniel that Francis would pray every day. And then I'll read his canticle of creation that you'll see has some connections here. So this is what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of God thrown into the fiery furnace, began to sing when they were in the furnace. Bless the Lord, all you works of the Lord. Angels of the Lord, bless the Lord. You heavens, bless the Lord. All you waters above the heavens, bless the Lord. All you hosts of the Lord, bless the Lord. Sun and moon, bless the Lord. Stars of heaven, bless the Lord. Every shower and dew, all you winds, bless the Lord. Fire and heat, bless the Lord. Frost and chill, bless the Lord. Ice and snow, bless the Lord. Nights and days, bless the Lord. Light and darkness, lightnings and clouds. Let all the earth bless the Lord. Everything growing from the earth, bless the Lord. Seas and rivers, bless the Lord. You dolphins and all water creatures, all you birds of the air, bless the Lord. All you beasts, wild and tame, bless the Lord. I like this because it's just so amazingly, radically inclusive of those things that we normally might think of as blessing the Lord, sun and moon and stars, all those nice things, but also wind and fire, all you beasts, wild as well as tame. There's this wonderful sense of everything praising God. And then, of course, Francis's canticle of creation picks up on most themes. And I won't read the whole thing, but I'll read enough to get a sense of it. At least this is where I'm intrigued in terms of possibly using some of this stuff in worship. As a Lutheran pastor who gets to help shape worship, I think, this is a good place to start. And in fact, with Francis's Canticle of Creation, we sing it in the Lutheran Book of Worship. All creatures of our God and King is a takeoff on Francis's Canticle. And it has one of the verses in there about fire. So this is how he starts off. Most High, all powerful, all good Lord. All praise is yours, all glory, all honor and blessing. To you alone, Most High, do they belong. All praise be yours, my Lord, through all that you have made. And first, my Lord, brother Sun, who brings the day and light you give us through him. How beautiful is he, how radiant in all his splendor. Of you, Most High, he bears the likeness. All praise be yours, my Lord, through sister moon and stars. In the heavens you have made them bright and all praise be yours, my Lord, through brothers wind and air. Air, fair and stormy, all the weather's moods, by which you cherish all that you have made. Now, let me just stop here for a second. I think that's really quite remarkable what Francis puts into this canticle. That fair and stormy, all the weather's moods,
by which you cherish all that you have made. I mean, in the light of Katrina, this is quite an astonishing thing to say. And maybe Frances in Italy didn't quite know the force of hurricanes like this. He certainly knew storms. So he is getting at this non-romantic notion of chaotic natural forces that can bless God and that God uses to cherish creation. That's amazing. All praise be yours, my Lord, through Sister Water, so useful, lowly, precious, and pure. All praise be yours, my Lord, through Brother Fire, through whom you brighten up the night. How beautiful he is, how gay, full of power and strength. All praise be yours, my Lord, through Sister Earth, our mother, who feeds us in her sovereignty and produces various fruits and colored flowers and herbs. All praise be yours, my Lord, through Sister Death, from whose embrace no mortal can escape. Praise and bless my Lord and give thanks. Serve God with great humility. Starts from that. I think Frances can show us the way. Teilhard de Chardin has a prayer. I might ask one of you to read this. Pastor Larry, who's the village pastor, gave this to me last night, saying, oh gosh, I just remembered that this is here. But again, it's a matter of taking up this chaotic stuff in nature and not asking God to keep it pushed away in a corner where it can't hurt us, but bringing it out and looking at it. Would anyone want to read this? Teilhard de Chardin was a 20th century French priest and scientist who went in some interesting directions.
Blessed be you, harsh matter, barren soil, stubborn rock, you who yield only to force, you who cause us to work if we would eat. Blessed be you, perilous matter, violent sea, untamable passion, you who, unless we fetter you, will devour us. Blessed be you, mighty matter, irresistible march of evolution. Reality ever newborn, you who by constantly shattering our mental categories, force us to go ever further and further in our pursuit of the truth. Blessed be you, universal matter, immeasurable time, boundless ether, triple abyss of stars and atoms and generations, you who by overflowing and dissolving our narrow standards or measurement reveal to us the dimension of God. Blessed be you, impenetrable matter, you who interpose between our minds and the world of essences, cause us to languish with the desire to pierce through the seamless veil of phenomena. Blessed be you, mortal matter, you who one day will undergo the process of dissolution within us and will thereby take us forcibly into the very heart of that which exists. You who batter us and then dress our wounds, you who resist and yield to us, you who wreck and build, you who shackle and liberate, the sap of our souls, the hand of God, the flesh of Christ, it is you, matter, that I bless.
Any comments on this?
I guess it's, I guess we're not used to understanding God as bringing bad things into our lives. We would rather like to see good things. And I guess the providence of God is take seriously the providence of God, where does that lead us to? He's kind of has an overarching providential understanding of God, much greater than, I guess, what a lot of us have.
Yeah, and it is hard. It's even hard to listen to that. I think it requires a great deal of trust to say, oh God, even though some of this hurts us, wildfire can hurt us. Hurricanes can hurt us. We trust, how do you want to put that? Your creative purpose in all of this. Your presence. Your will to bring life even out. You're right, it's way bigger than we're used to thinking, than I am, for sure. Other comments on this?
I think we probably have to take a big one to blame on that, you know, and not really think of this as being good for us, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems historically, and this is true in the biblical strings that we follow through, we either blame God and say, oh God, you're doing this, or you're doing this to punish us, or punish those guys, or else we've made these forces into sort of agents of the devil, so we put forth a power that's nearly as strong as God and always working at cross purposes. What I'm suggesting with this is that it's neither one of those, you know, that the challenge of naturally chaotic things is neither of the devil, opposing God, and certainly not God's will to punish. It sort of stands above it all. Okay, what else do I have? Holden has struggled with fire because, you know, last year Holden had to be evacuated. Were any of you here then?
We were hoping to come up here. Oh. We only ended up coming the last 2 days. That we were going to be here a week and only here 2 days. So we came up right after.
Oh, right after. So you didn't actually get evacuated, but you were among the first ones back in the village. Wow, what was that like?
It was different because there weren't very many people here. Yeah. You know, generally when we come, you know, there's a sizable number of people. You know, seeing all this equipment laying all over the place that had been set out there in case the possibility that the fire came close to the village or to the village.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and every day we'd get a report, you know, from the people working on the fire, just what was going on. And,
yeah. Was it, I bet it was still smoky, and or was it?
Yeah, they were smoldering the fires as we came up the lake. Made us more aware of the danger that this area is a part of, at least for me.
Yeah. Well, now, if you go hiking around in the forest, and at least with my eyes, I see the forest really differently than I ever used to. And you see all this fuel built up.
Yeah.
It's just a mess.
I know we were commenting yesterday on our walk, you know, how the forest is loaded on the ground with just ready for very, very, very susceptible to fire. I noticed some charred trees yet, so you know, I kind of wondered when was the last time there was a fire through here.
We saw some of that today too, and
yeah,
about that.
I hadn't really noticed that, you know, a number of times. So I guess the benefit of this has made me aware to look at these things a little bit more closely.
No, you just poof.
So there must have been a fire in this valley at one time.
Mm-hmm. Over the last couple of years, I've worked several weeks on what they call defensible space here in the village, where we've tried to push out from the village and eliminate all this fuel that you're talking about, and get rid of some of the shrubbery and get the tree branches up and stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All in an attempt to keep it from spreading this way.
so that you could defend the village at least.
Yeah, the Forest Service said they couldn't even pretend to defend us if we didn't spread this stuff out, get rid of some of the fuel.
Right. Oh, that's great work. And I heard that one of the projects that Holden is looking at is replacing all of the shake roofs, certainly all the chalets except the brand new one have shake roofs. And they need that. All of those just make me nervous. I look at that. Though evidently the Washington State Historical Society didn't want them to change it out. Mm-hmm. Which is just amazing to me. I want to say, oh, do you want any living history here at all, Historical Society? But I think that's happening. Isn't that going to happen, Pete? You know?
Okay. It's in the works. Holden wants it right away, but we're held by this Historical Society. And also the defensible space, that was up in the air too, because we're not allowed to go into the forest too far. Mm-hmm. We literally own this building, but we don't own the land that it's on, so we have to get permission for everything, which is frustrating at times.
Mm-hmm.
We had to get permission to do defensible space.
The Forest Service asks you to make defensible space and then get permission for that. That makes sense, I suppose. You want to be able to do it right, but if it gets too bureaucratic, it's pretty good.
Sure.
Okay, moving right along here. Here's a liturgy, and you guys might have actually done this, that was written at Holden when everyone who was evacuated returned. And it might have been when the staff came back first, before the guests came back. And they did a whole series of Vespers liturgies, because most of the staff evacuated down to the Holden B&B. You probably don't know this. And the guests were sent away. And the staff put all of their stuff together and took their most precious things and put it in the shop? Pete? I mean, put it in one of the...
in the Portal Museum.
Oh, yeah, the Portal Museum, right.
That's the big one.
Because it was the big metal one. And so it was just chaotic. But anyway, I'll just read a portion of this from the evacuation returning liturgy on August 25th. And this is a modified version of 1 Chronicles chapter 16, 17, and 20. I'll just read a little bit of this, but it's a wonderful sort of retelling with the same biblical cadence of this story. The people brought in their special artifacts and set them inside the building that Christopher had selected for. And they offered burnt offerings and offerings of well-being before God. When Emily had finished offering the burnt offerings and the offerings of well-being, she blessed the people in the name of the Most High. Emily was the pastor lecturer. And Paul and Sonia distributed to every person, man and woman alike, to each a loaf of bread, a portion of meat, and a cake of raisins. Janet and Diane appointed certain of the community as caretakers before the Ark of the Most High, to invoke, to thank, to praise the Most High, the God of Israel. Asaph was the chief, and second to him, Harry, Terry, Jamie, James, Nathan, Becca, Brian, Greg, and Susie, with harps and lyres. Asaph was to ring the bell, and the priests, Brian and George, were to make loud noises regularly before the Holy of Holies of God. Then on that day, Christopher first appointed the chipping of wood for the hotshots to Asaph and his coal. Oh, give thanks to the Most High, call on God's name, make known God's deeds among the peoples. Sing to God, sing praises to God, tell of God's wonderful works. Goes on and on and on. I think this is really quite wonderful because it takes this biblical, historical account of a great challenge to the people of Israel. And I can't remember, I mean, I haven't looked up 1 Chronicles to see what exactly that challenge was. Probably an invasion from some other nation. Takes that and refashions it according to the challenge posed to Holden. And I think very creatively and playfully and faithfully writes their own story out of it. Tells of this drama and makes it into a way of praising God. Rather than saying, oh, what a pain this was that we had to do this, and how awful it is that this fire is here, and, you know, there are very many other ways that any community could have dealt with the
the huge challenge that Holden was faced with. So I love how they turned it around and did that with it. Let me show you some of, just a little bit of Kristen Gilge's liturgical work. And then we'll do our thing. This is a series of banners that she did in 2001, I think. The theme was fire and water.
Is this the resident artist here?
Yeah. Oh. Uh-huh. Yeah, Kristen did that piece too. And these are, you know, big silk banners hanging down. And they're lovely, but they're surely not romanticized. I mean, there's mire that's in there. This tree has been consumed. The others are about to be.
Where are these, Jean?
These are actually now in a church in Texas. But they had been, remember when we were first here in the Village Center, the big silk hangings that were there, that reflected the theme for this year. This was from the same thing in 2001. Wow. And these had been hanging down in the Village Center. Mm-hmm.
And then,
another close-up of these. There's the water one.
No, isn't it wonderful?
Yeah.
They still get the same sense because there's a sweet olden scene. Maybe the fire is back more. Well, we'll go backwards to see it. Because there were two fire scenes. A detail, and here you see the, and here you get even a sense of the firestorm. And that's what I see in it anyway. The when a fire gets hot enough and the conditions are right, it can create its own weather. It produces its own wind. And that's what I see here: these circular patterns of fire being brought up by the wind. It's not a gentle scene. Okay. So who wants to go first with this?
Rita was saying she did. Right? Did you say, no?
Yes, I was begging to go first. Well, sure, I'd be happy to. I told Jean on the way here on our trip as we were getting more acquainted that one of the things I thought I needed another life to do was to write Broadway plays, which is really very goofy. I'm also reminded that I've written poetry since I was tiny, and I have no idea why, and it's never been my main passion, but I can remember being visited by the muse and writing a poem and then going down the hallway to my sister's bedroom and waking her up to, Jerry, listen to this poem. She'd get one eye open and listen. And she was my most trusted audience, of course, and often the only person who ever heard a poem, because sometimes poems are really bad and you don't realize that until about a week later. So you are all my sister Jerry today, because this is all brand new, and so it may not exist after today. And then this other funny piece of this story to me is, I try to do exercise and stretching, and I was coming here not sure what I'd have for I knew I'd have outdoor stuff, but I got inspired to make a tape of an old-fashioned cassette tape of this exercise routine for myself. So I happened to have this silly little cheap tape recording thing with an old-fashioned microphone that you can get down and talk into, you know. So I have this multimedia production here that adds to the chaos. And I did kind of want to borrow a Holden child for this background voice that I taped, but I felt a little shy about just approaching the child and saying, hey, how about coming to be taped with me? Plus, I didn't spot any. Must have all been in school. But trying to imagine the voice, my voice, of course, on this tape as a child's. And, oh gosh, this is so scary. Okay. And I don't know how well this will project it as the $1.95 special piece of equipment.
I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I should die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
Now I lay me down before the roaring fire. Now I lay me down before the surging water. Now I lay me down before the mighty rushing wind, the quaking earth, exploding, scalding mountain. Now I lay me down at the outer edge of reason. On the wings of madness, I soar into the heart of the dreamer. Now, this very now, I am laid down into the bowels of Sheol. Chaos. Chaos. Out of chaos, the child is born.
If I should die,
and chaos, wake, into chaos,
I pray the Lord my
goes
soul
my soul
to take.
That's been cool.
Yeah.
My first multimedia presentation.
Amazing putting together of that old prayer that mm-hmm. I prayed every night of the world when I was, until I was what? I don't know, my 20s maybe. And this really grown up woman looking into the chaos. Wow.
I found it interesting that it was just very soothing and peaceful. Like I lay me down before the roaring wind and before the fire. And at the end, you just brought in chaos. And had I not had this context of a week long, you know, chaos is not necessarily, you know, here's a new view into chaos, I would have taken that as more of like a, oh, she took a turn.
Oh, no, trouble.
Yeah, like
yeah.
Yeah. More despair at the end there. But I don't feel like I had that at the end.
Thank you, Lita. Okay, Pete, you or me?
I'll go.
Okay. Yeah, it's hard to be the last. You're supposed to go.
Oh. So, I've been working in the rain all day outside. I don't sing unless there's certain conditions involving a beer or anything. And,
for shuffled beers.
Yeah. All right, it gets better. And, yeah, I haven't really done this in a long time, this song. But basically, it's a song about the 1949 Man Gulch.
Oh, wow.
Fire, which Gene spoke about earlier. And apparently, I didn't bring the lyrics either. So, we're just going to try and do it. So just letting you know, you'll hear me mess up several times. But, and if you have questions about what happened, I think you probably mentioned something. But it tells the story about this fire in Montana outside of Helena, 1949. 15 smoke jumpers dropped in and 13 of them died. So let's see if I can remember this now. I really wish I would have brought the lyrics.
Is this your own song?
No. Oh, and also, yeah, there was a guy who did it, James McKeenan, maybe. I heard it once when I was a freshman in college, and then I forgot, and then I made up kind of my own, I think it's the same chords, but a little different than he does it, I think. Someone, I did it once earlier this year, and they said it was a little different, but we'll see. So I hope I remember the words. Fade that now. think the real version, the live versions by this professional musician is actually pretty good too, as opposed to an album.
Huh. Do you guys all know the story of the Man Gulch fires in 49? That was about?
I don't think I do.
Norman McLean, who wrote A River Runs Through It, this lovely little story. I mean, the movie is really nice. The short story is even better. Oh, it's a beautiful story. Wrote this story called, he called it Young Men in Fire, and it's all about the Man Gulch fire of 1949. McLean's dad was the Presbyterian minister in Missoula, and so it's really infused with this Christian sensibility. But Pete was singing about the foreman who was one of three people who survived that. The fire blew up, and again, the wind came up and the fire blew up, and they were trying to run up this 45-degree angle slope. And, oh, what was the foreman's name?
Dodge. Something. I forget. Yeah. I was trying to think.
Yeah. Dodge saw that he wasn't going to be able to outrun the fire, so he lit an escape fire. And that was really one of the first times in modern firefighting history that had been done. He basically put the ground on fire, because it's really mostly a grassy hillside. So he would burn up all the fuel in his area, which he did. And as soon as that had burnt up, he jumped into the middle of it. And then he had this safe zone around it. And the fire roared over the top of him and caught up with all but two of the other firefighters. Amazing story. So how might something like this function? Could you see? What do I want to say? A song like this, a memorial song. Why are memorial songs important? What do they do?
Or tell a story. Mm-hmm. They don't let the lessons of that day learned die, I guess. I think that was the intent.
Yeah. Yeah, they keep the memory of that alive and those people alive. Mm-hmm. So it's a way of grieving the reality of that loss. And also, in a way, it's sort of a microcosm. It's just occurring to me that Dodge's escape fire was totally counterintuitive. Why would you light a fire in order to be rescued from a fire? And that's why the other guys didn't jump in. I mean, they thought he's nuts. He's gone completely loco. So lifting up that particular piece of it talks about the upside downness of this thing. So that's Jesus saying, unless the seed dies, it can't bear any fruit.
Something else I heard about that Man Gulch fire was the 13 men who ran up the valley, like away from the flames, but the flames were going so fast there was no chance. And one or two of the survivors didn't run up the valley, but they ran straight up the side. So the flames were getting really close to them, but they ran alongside the flames and then got up over the side of the ridge as opposed to up the valley, which was left more flat. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, they did, and they found this one little narrow hole through the, I mean, just like these mountains at the top, there are these cuts in rock. And although the mountains around Man Gulch aren't majestic and dark, as high as this, that's what they made their way through, a little cut through the rock. Yeah. Okay, so here's my poem. Ever since I was in seminary and had listened to my first lecture on Genesis 1 and learned about the Hebrew in Genesis 1. I've just been intrigued by it ever since. the word, I mean, when Genesis 1, remember the cadence of that. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and earth, and darkness covered the face of the deep, there was a formless void. And the Spirit of God hovered over the waters. This formless void is, in Hebrew, tohu v'bohu, which is a silly sounding thing anyway. I mean, it's just a silly sounding thing. A professor suggested that a really good translation would be waste schmaste, because then you get the rhyme scheme and you get the sense of what it's about. So, all my life now, tohu v'bohu has been something of a silly turn of phrase that I go back to when I need it. So here we go. This is sort of my reworking of Genesis 1 and how chaos came to be. In the beginning, when God was creating, tohu v'bohu, waste, shmeis, was already there. And God said, stay, go into your sea and no farther. But chaos quivered in God's hands, and a smidgen leapt out free. Creation's monkey wrench for our pretensions. The splurt flew off, and God saw that it was good.
Can you read it again?
Yeah.
Before you do that,
yeah.
What is your definition of chaos, I guess?
Well, that's a good question. Chaos, biblically, has been defined as anything that opposes creation. Literally, the tohu v'bohu word means confusion, emptiness, nothingness. It's that sort of undercurrent thing. What we've been looking at this week, though, is how sort of commonsensical understandings of chaos, which would include, for me, like wildfire is chaotic. We can't control it. It's beyond human control. And it apparently does undo lots of creation. It burns up trees and grass.
I think of chaos as something that is contrary to laws or plans, and mm-hmm. wildfire doesn't even fall in that category because wildfire and hurricanes and stuff are all follow natural laws, the laws that God put into effect.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I would put chaos in the common sense understanding of, I mean, I put wildfire in the common sense understanding of chaos. Then we looked at chaos theory yesterday, which is a whole new thing. We don't even need to go there for this. I mean, I wasn't even thinking of chaos theory when I wrote this. But that's what I've been working with, sort of this common sense notion of beyond human control as in chaos. So, but I mean, theologically in Genesis, it's sort of beyond God's control. It just, not beyond, I mean, it, what do I want to say? Yeah, the chaos works to undermine God's work. That's the notion of it in Genesis. But anyway, I'll just read the poem again. In the beginning, when God was creating, tohu v'bohu, waste shmeist was. Already there. And God said, stay. Go into your sea and no farther. But chaos quivered in God's hands, and a smidgen leapt out free. Creation's monkey wrench for our pretensions. The splurt flew off, and God saw that it was good. my mind's eye, the chaos was, what's that goose? It's not Silly Putty, it's gooier than Silly Putty. You know what I mean? It's a kid's stuff.
Slime?
Yeah, slime. I was thinking of slime.
I like how the poem sort of plays with that tension of, I don't know, the theological battles that go on around human free will, but that completely paradoxical, impossible truth to understand that God created us and then gave somehow, even though God's omnipotent, negotiated something with creation that allows choice. And of course, I know there's just all sorts of ways theologians play with that. There is choice, but God is omnipotent, and of course that can't exist as two side-by-side truths. So it plays with that, sort of like, and yeah, it slipped out of there and bounced around, and yet God, in God's omnipotence, says, that's good. It's nice. And sort of worrisome.
Yeah, very worrisome. Well, that's almost it for our creative responses to wildfire. But we can also use, oh gosh, our hour is up already. Dinner is almost to be served. But does anyone have any other comments on wildfire? And Pete, did you want to talk about the Ishmael stuff a little?
No, it's okay.
We could do that later if you want.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll close with a hymn out of the new Renewing Worship thing. There are a couple of good Pentecost hymns, of course, when you think of fire in the New Testament. You either go to the fire of the Holy Spirit at Pentecost, which was a little scary to everyone but the disciples who were on the inside of the fire, in a sense. The people on the outside of the fire were pretty terrified. Either go to that or sort of the apocalyptic flames of hell. Hellfire, damnation, brimstone, and all of that. We have a couple of hymns in Renewing Worship that talk about fire in terms of Pentecost. But I think that, let me just read this and then you can comment and see how they might fit in with the themes we've been talking about this week. Here's one called Send Down the Fire. And the refrain is the only thing that I'll read. Send down the fire of your justice. Send down the rains of your love. Come, send down the Spirit. Breathe life in your people. And we shall be people of God. And here, of course, fire is very metaphorical. Does that connect with anything you've been thinking about in this study? Not anything I've really pursued in terms of connecting it with this study, but the metaphor of fire in Pentecost really is powerful, and in a sense we've tamed it, we're used to it. You know, we put red on pyramids and we say, oh gosh, this is fire imagery. And yet really the fire of the Spirit is quite beyond us. Has a power to move that is sometimes terrifying. It just, what this does to me, I guess, is just calls me back to the power of the imagery of fire and makes it a little less safe, a little less tame. Okay, here's our other fire hymn in here. Fire of God, undying flame. Fire of God, undying flame, Spirit who in splendor came, let your heat my soul refine. till it glows with love divine. Breath of God that swept in power in the Pentecostal hour, holy breath, be now in me, source of vital energy. Any zippiness in that for you? Let your heat, my soul, refine, picks up from the imagery of the refiner's fire in the Old Testament from Malachi. Refiner's fire was, of course, applied to metals to take all the impurities out of the metal and make it pure and strong. And that is not a gentle process, that's a fire cleansing process. So when it says, let your heat, my soul, refine, do we really know what we're asking for there? It can be pretty intense. Any final comments?
Maybe a request, just a thought when you say your prayers tonight. But I have a goddaughter who's at this moment in a hospital, unable to hardly move. She's a smoke jumper.
Oh my God.
She's quite a gal. I'm really proud of her. She went to college and got a PhD in nuclear biology. And what did she decide to do? She decided to be a smoke jumper. And a year or two ago, she was in a smoke jumping accident. After many, many jumps, she got caught in a tree, and then it broke loose, and she crashed down, and her leg bones were pushed up into her spine. And she got over that. She recovered all right. And this last couple of weeks ago, she was going up to in a plane to check out a fire to see how it was going, and the plane crashed.
Oh.
And so she's in the hospital again, and they said it'll probably be 6 months before she'll even be able to sit up.
Oh,
but anyway, she think of her tonight when you think of fire and some of the problems that we have because we try to fight nature.
Was she out of Missoula or out of Boise?
I'm not too sure where she was out of, but this my impression is it was in the Montana area someplace.
Yeah.
But,
What's your first name?
March.
March? Okay. Yeah, that's special. She will recover?
To some extent anyway.
Thanks for sharing that. Anybody else? Well, thank you everyone for joining us for today.
Thank you.
For the week, or for a portion of the week. Appreciated your being here and